Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat is that I've brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh is daf Yud Chet. We're holding at the Halakha Mishnah on daf Yud Zayin Amud Beit. And remember that according to the Rambam, we are now listing the various machlokas in between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, which are part of the 18, not the 18 gezeras, but the other 18. The 18 things that they argued on and continued to argue on besides the 18 things at the beginning, which they were hushvu on. So, lovely way to understand the perek, Beit Shammai Omrim. Ein shorin dio v'samanim v'karshinim, ela kedei sheyishuro miba'od yom. So we have over here is a list of things, which we've gotten used to the idea, that you could do whatever you want on Erev Shabbos, if you're not going to be doing any Yisr on Shabbos, you know, so you set your Shabbos clock or you can turn on your oven or whatever you want. There's no Yisr in your oven working on Shabbos. But Beit Shammai holds that there is an Yisr. And he holds that there's a concept called Shvitat Kelim, which means not only your animal, which you're not allowed to work with on Shabbos, as it says Beferish in the Pasuk, but even your things, your tools, are not allowed to work for you on Shabbos. So according to this, he holds that even a passive work, as we'll see, is also considered to be a problem for your kelim. So if you're doing soaking usually is a problem of lush, because what happens is that the things become connected when they soak long enough, and that is the equivalent of making a dough. So you're not allowed to soak ink. That would be obviously for use in writing. A dye, which would be good for dyeing clothes, or animal food like vetches, because they turn into sort of like a cereal kind of thing, unless they would be completely finished during the day, and then it'll be sitting in the kli, but the kli won't be serving any melacha on Shabbos. Whereas Beit Hillel says, there is no problem over here, because there's no problem of Shvitat Kelim, according to him. Another issue is Beit Shammai Omrim, Einot Nim Unin Eshel Pishtan, L'toch HaTanur, El Kedei Sheyabilu Miba'od Yom, Another thing that is a malacha, so to speak, although it's passive, it's a little less passive, because in this case, you put, after you take the flax and you comb them, you have to now get rid of all of the coloration. And in order to do that, which is a bleaching process, you have to put it in for a while into a hot oven, and gradually it turns white. So you can't do this unless the heating is completed during the daytime, and it's not going to heat them at night. So you could say that heating is a little bit more active than simply being a container for something that's going to get stuck together, and therefore the Chiddush of mentioning this separately would be that Aliba de Beit Hillel, it's mutter. Same thing would be true in terms of putting wool into a vat, where over there it actually has to absorb the color, and that itself is an act of tzviya. So according to Beit Shammai, your kli is being tzoveya on Shabbos, unless the dyeing is completed before Shabbos, or Beit Hillel Matirin. Beit Shammai omrim, ein porsim et sudot chayav ofot v'dagim, ela kedei sheyitzodo b'od yom, u'Beit Hillel is matir. Now another thing, and this, at least on the surface, appears to be that the kli is much more active, because what we're talking about over here is trapping, setting up a trap before Shabbos, and very normally, we're going to discuss this in the Gemara, a trap is active, right? So a animal goes into the trap, a spring shuts the door on it, and then that means that the kli has actually done the trapping. I see Barnea's already getting ready over there. He wants to pick up his water to wave at me and throw at me. Not yet. Okay. So therefore, according to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to set the trap, whether it's for fish or whether it's for birds or animals. Whereas Beit Hillel says, in all cases, there's no problem of setting traps. Number four, Beit Shammai says, you can't even sell something on Erev Shabbos to a goy. You cannot put a load on his truck with him. You can't put a load on him unless he's going to get to a place which is away from you, a mokum korov, if that's the place where he's going, in time for Shabbos. Because In this case, we have a different issue, obviously, and we're not talking about that the guy is going to be doing something for you on Shabbos. We're talking about he's doing something all for himself. And the only problem over here, Aliba de Beit Shammai, is that because you're loading him up, it appears to people who are looking on that you're basically shipping, right? So you're loading up your stuff on a truck. The UPS truck is pulling out right before Shabbos. And that means that you're asking UPS to deliver this for you on Shabbos. And that would mean that the goy is doing malacha for you on Shabbos, and Chazal asked even asking a guy to do malacha on Shabbos. So even if over here he is not, and you're just loading up his own thing that he bought from you, but because it looks like it, Beit Shammai asers, and Beit Hillel does not think that it looks like he's actually hiring him. That's number four. Continuing on with number five, Beit Shammai omrim. We do not give in clothes to the dry cleaner or to the laundry or skins to be tanned because it looks like, again, if there's not enough time to finish before Shabbos, it looked like you basically have hired him to do the work for you on Shabbos, even though you didn't, because the guy is certainly welcome to finish it after Shabbos if he wants. But people will think that you did. Ubikulan, Beit Hillel Matirin. Beit Hillel says this is not a problem at all, even if, as long as it's like the last minute of the day, Imat Shemesh, as long as there's still light, the sun hasn't set and it's before Shkia, there's no problem. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, who you would think would do all of his things, Aliba de Hillel, as a great-grandson, he said, no. Actually, although this is what Hillel Paskin, and it's certainly the halacha, but Beit Abba, you should know that my father was very makpid, that even though they hold it's mutter, but since clay lavan are very difficult to get clean, so to get something clean, it needs to be soaked. If it's white, you need to soak it for a few days. So they would give a white begadim to a washer, a launderer, 3 days before Shabbos to make sure that nobody would think that they were giving it in to do it. And where it isn't nicker, even though normally you're not allowed to be machmer on yourself like Beit Shammai against Beit Hillel, something like this where it just looks like now's the time I'm giving it in to the cleaners. There's nothing in there that indicates in any way that you're going against Beit Hillel. So because of that, it was okay, and they were machmer on themselves. Both agree, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel both agree, surprisingly, because you would certainly think that Beit Shammai would answer the following, that you are allowed to be to'anim korot Beit Abad v'igulei hagat. You're allowed to put on the big, heavy beams on an olive press, and you're allowed to put on the wooden, round, heavy wheel-like things that they used to use on a wine press. And the reason you could do this is because even Beit Shammai was not going to aser something, which if you did it on Shabbos, you would not be over on a Nisr D'oraita. Why is it not a D'oraita to crush wine and to crush olives on Shabbos? Dafka, it is a Nisr D'oraita. It's considered to be dash. It's the equivalent of separating something out from where it was initially connected and part of, which is like taking the wheat out from the chaff or taking over here the oil from inside the olive or the liquid from inside the grape. And that should be a chiyuv. It is a chiyuv. But here we're talking about that the grapes or olives were actually ground beforehand. They were crushed before Shabbos. So basically, the liquid is going to run out anyway. When you put something on it, all you're doing is making it a more rapid process, but you're not really doing anything which is specifically the act of Isser. So because of that, because even if you had done it on Shabbos, it wouldn't have been a Chiyuv Chatas, all agree, even Beit Shammai, that there is no Isser for you to do it on Erev Shabbos, and we're not concerned that people looks like a Shvisas Kalev that you're being over on, even Aliba de Beit Shammai. The next thing we want to discuss is if Barnea holds his hand out with a kli, is he mechuyev to hold it that way until the end of Shir, and we give it a din of a Carmelite, Or is he allowed to set it down at some time during the shir? I would ask for your votes on this issue because it might help us a great deal for all of these interruptions. L'chaim, l'chaim. Man tanan l'netinat mayim l'diozu ishriyata. Now, this is a little bit strange because all it says over here is that your Beit Shammai says you can't put the ink ingredients into the water. I mean, there's no activity that's being done. So apparently he holds that the very act of putting it into water is the lisha, because you don't mix it or anything. You don't do an act of gibul. How do you say gibul in English? What is lisha when you're making dough? You know, you mix it with your hands. I can't think of it. Kneading, thank you. So you don't do any actual kneading, you're just putting it in the water. And apparently that would be considered to be the Yisur D'oraisa, because V'araya, Beit Shammai Aser Shvi'isas Kelim. Says Rabbi Yosef, that's going Aliba to Rebbe, because we have in a Braita question, what happens if one guy puts in flour and another guy puts in water? So whoever put in the last thing, he's the guy that did the lisha. But nobody did anything. They didn't move with their hands to do any kneading. So nonetheless, you're chayav, divrei Rebbe. Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yudah says, no, kneading is kneading. You need to be able to move it with your fingers. If there's no kneading, just putting in the liquids together, despite the fact that they do create a paste and they end up becoming connected, that's not called gibul. So our Mishnah is clearly going, Aliba de Rebbe. Omar le'Abaye. Maybe Rebbe Yosef, who said that, was talking about dough. Because dough, the normal way to make dough is that you do knead it with your hands. But maybe even over here, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda would be moda, that when you're talking about dio as opposed to dough, that over there, it's lav bar gibulhu, there'd be no way to knead it, even if you wanted to knead it. So maybe everybody would be moda, that is the act of kneading, just mixed it. Ema lechayev. No, says Rabbi Yosef, absolutely not. Because there's a braita that says that if one guy puts in afer, now afer is ashes. There's no way that you can do an act of kneading on ashes, and another guy puts in water, then the second guy, whoever the second guy is going to be the one to be mechayev for lush, because that is the mix. Divrei Rebbe. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, even in that case, it's only if you actually mix it with your hands. So now over there, you can't mix ashes with your hands. There's no kneading on it. Well, you know, sometimes the word afer is used instead of afar, which would mean dirt, and that you certainly could knead. You're making cement or something. So maybe it's talking about afar, the bar gibel. No, we have two braisas. One braisa says this using the word afer, and the other one says it using the word afar. Now, they're not both saying the same thing, are they? So it must be that indeed, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda argues, even if it's something that is not really needable. No, that doesn't prove anything. What do you mean one says A, one says B? They're not part of the same collection of braisas, are they? Midi Gabi Hadodi, Tani, they were different collections of braisas. So maybe Reb Chiya uses the word afer, and Rav Oshaya uses the word afar, but both of them were talking about afar. I'm looking for a raya that Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda would hold, that even if it's something not needable, that it would need to be actually needed. So we don't really know that. Tanur Rabbanan. Now, we have a braita that isn't very clear, that's talking about other types of work that's done. So the question is, can you turn on your sprinkler system before Shabbos? You're allowed to open up the water to water your garden, even though it's like a minute before Shkia, and the watering goes on during Shabbos. And it's not a problem. Not only that, you're allowed to put an incense, it appears to be an incense dish, and you would burn, they used to remember because of the fact that they weren't able to dry clean, they would put a mugmar under the kelim Erev Shabbat to give them a good smell. They needed a lot of deodorant. And midgamrim ochin kol yom kulo, and it doesn't matter, even though it's going to continue to burn, keep smoking all Shabbos long, that's not a problem. The same thing is true if you're making a beautiful silver design. Let's say you're making a becher, you know, the Taimani design where you make all those little flowers and so on. Then you burn a little bit of sulfur under it. The sulfur makes the design stick out by blackening the inside of the flowers, whatever it is you were doing. You're allowed to do that also. You could put burning sulfur under the things you were working on just before Shkia, and they'll continue to be sulfured all day long. Kol Shabbat Kulo. You're allowed to put Kilor, which is a medication, on your eye right before Shabbos. You could put a bandage with all types of medication on it, on top of a wound, Erev Shabbos. Even they couldn't do this on Shabbos proper, and it continues to heal all day long. And even though this is not a Malacha D'oraisa, and therefore you think it's Bichlal, not a Chiddush. So there's all kinds of discussions in the Achronim. Why would we mention this case? So sometimes we mention this case because you might have thought that the Gezeira against Ripui would have included not only Ripui itself, but in other words, not doing the Ripui, but the Ripui happening. So if that were the Gezeira, then it would have indeed been Aser. Kamashmalan, it's not. But the one thing that you can't do, you cannot put your chitim into your electric grinder in order for it to be ground up during Shabbos. And the grounder, I guess they probably had water mills in those days, but you can't use your water mill unless it's going to be completely ground up. And that is something that you need to be true according to whoever said this price. The first thing is our mutter. For some reason, this is usher. Why is this usher? My rabba mipnei shemash ma'at kol. It's because it makes a lot of noise. Now, what is the problem with making a lot of noise? This, by the way, is very nogea halacha lamaisa. Because even though we're going to see in the sugya that we end up, at least the way Tosfos understands it, but the Shulchan Aruch paskens like this, that we don't end up understanding the Braita as being a problem of Mashma'at Kol, that Adarabba, we understand it as reflecting the Shita of Beit Shammai, and therefore we're going to have to answer why the other ones are Mutter, which we'll go through in a minute. But the Mashma'at Kol, the reason it's still Nogei Halacha L'maisa, is because the Rama says that the Minag is to be Machmer on Mashma'at Kol. So that would mean that it would depend what the Mashmat Kol is. And this seems to be Machlokas Rishonim. Rashi learns that the Mashmat Kol is itself a cheapening of Shabbos. So because of that, if you have your TV set going on Shabbos, it's cheapening. And therefore, even though there'd be no Isser, but we were gozer for not any type of ziluta of Shabbat. However, in terms of the halacha, almost everybody agrees that the problem is of chashad, that people will say that you're doing something on Shabbos. And the proof of this is that there's almost no one who assers running your grandfather clock on Shabbos. Now, grandfather clock is very noisy. And yet you're allowed to set it to go off, bong, bong, bong. So if noise itself is a zilusa of Shabbos, noise of a malacha, so then you wouldn't be allowed to do this. However, the heter that the priest can bring her, because since everybody has a grandfather clock, so there's nobody that's going to be chayshish that you're making noise on Shabbos. And therefore, the problem of Mashmat Kol is specifically in terms of the Chashash, which would mean that nowadays, where all of these things are controlled by automatic clocks, there ought to be no reason even to be Machbar on Hashmat Kol if you don't hold of the Tam of Ziluta. So it's just a brief halachic discussion. Omerlei Rav Yosef, what makes you say, Rabba, that it's because of Mashmat Kol? I mean, that's like a whole new thing. I never heard of such a thing. I did hear of a concept called Shvitat Kelim. Why don't you say it's going like Beit Shammai, and it's talking about Shvitat Kelim? Because it says in a bright up affairs, it doesn't say anything about Hashmat Kol. It says, V'chol asher amarti aleichem tishameru. Everything after it says Sheshes Yomim Tavod and so on and so forth. And then it says, everything I said to you, be careful. What's everything you just mentioned already? You mentioned Shorcha and Chamorcha and Ben Amatcha. I mean, what else is there? Ah, that's coming. L'rabot Shvitat Kelim. So you see that there is an Isser Shvitat Kelim. You show me where it says anywhere in the Torah anything about making noise on Shabbos. Ela Omer of Yosef, indeed, it would be Mishum Shvitat Kelim. I disagree. It would be going Dafka, Aliba de Beit Shammai. So wait a minute. But so then how about all the other things that you said are mutter? Why are they mutter according to Beit Shammai? If you're going to tell me that according to Beit Hillel, I mean, unless you're saying it's Beit Hillel, if it's Beit Hillel too, and this is what Rabbi Yosef apparently holds, if it's going a libra to Beit Hillel and Shvitat Kelim, at least this is where we're up to now. And where we're up to now is a consideration that there are different levels of Shvitat Kelim. There's active Kelim, and there's passive Kelim, and then there are areas in which the Kli is not even doing something which is an activity on its own. So in other words, you have completely passive Kelim where it's simply holding something. You have somewhat active Kelim where they're heating something. So at least something is being done that is active, such as the case of Unim Shel Pishta. You have highly active Kelim where you're talking about a trap that would spring close. That's highly active. But those are different levels. So it could be that maybe Beit Hillel holds of some Shvitat Kelim and doesn't hold of other Shvitat Kelim, in which case we'd be able to make certain cases, as long as we define what the Kli is doing, we could make them work out sometimes a little bit of Beit Shammai, possibly, sometimes a little bit of Beit Hillel, because now that we're talking about this, we have a broader kind of field to worry about who says what. So assuming that according to Rav Yosef, Beit Hillel has a blanket Isur Shvitat Kelim, so then why in the world does it say over here that you're allowed to do the mugmar, you're allowed to do the sulfuring? Why is that? Isn't that a problem of Shvitas Kelim? No, because these Kelim are not doing anything. They're just sitting there passively, and things are working in them. It's not the same thing. Okay, well, what about the thing in the tanur of the Unin Shel Pishtan? The Unin Shel Pishtan are actually being heated. I mean, that's something other than just holding, isn't it? It doesn't matter, but is the oven doing something? The oven is sitting there, and the heating is from because there are things in the oven that's heating, but you can't call that truly active. It's one slightly more active activity. Even that Beit Hillel is matter. Okay, well, what about the traps? I mean, the traps are very active. So why would Mitzudot Chayava Ov Dagim, why would that be mutter? Oh, we must be talking about completely passive traps. So we'd be talking about dangling a fish hook, for instance, where the hook is just sitting there, and it's the worm that's doing the work, or it's really the fish that's doing the work, or the type of kukri. Kukri are types of traps that are made out of basket weaves where the fish can swim in, but when it tries to swim out, there's pieces of basket that's sticking out and catch it in its gills, and it can't get out of the smaller hole. Says the Gemara, no. That actually we do not accept the fact that Beit Hillel holds of Shvitas Kelim at all, because Hashta the Omer of Oshaya Omer of Asi, Man Tana Shvitat Kelim Dioraita, it's only Beit Shammai. It's not Beit Hillel. This is in the Braita, and therefore, please, Rabbi Yosef, it's your wrong approach. It is not going like Beit Hillel. If you're going to insist that the Braita is talking about Shvitat Kelim and not about the noise, then it would be only Aliba de Beit Shammai. So now it would turn out that according to Beit Shammai, since we see in our Mishnah that he answers all of these things, Bein Ka'avin Ma'aseh, Bein Teloka Avin Ma'aseh, it's Aser. And then the Beit Hillel, it would be Mutter, even though it does do a Ma'isa, and even though it's an active trap. But if that's the case, so then what about all the cases in this Braita? Now it turns out that according to Rav Yosef, the reason that you cannot do the grinding on Shabbos has nothing to do with making noise. It has to do with Shvitat Kelim. So then if it has to do with Shvitat Kelim, it must be going Aliba de Beit Shammai. And Aliba de Beit Hillel would be mutter. Now, this is the reason that we paskin that you actually are allowed to use your electric grinder on Shabbos, except, as I said, the Ramah says that we're machmir. Because Tosafos over here, paskins like this piece of the Gemara, in which case we're docha the idea of Hashma'at Kol. So even though it's embedded in our minds that Hashma'at Kol is a big Isser, and there are many, many Rishonim who say that, no, actually, we paskin in this Gemara like we originally said, that it's Beit Hillel with Hashma'at Kol, because of that we're Machmir, but actually, Halacha L'maisa, it's a Chumrah. So because of that, you should understand, not only is it only a Derabbanan, It's a drabbanan that we're being machmer on to be noig iser. And therefore, when you have questions about doing things that are purely hashma'at kol oriented, for instance, running your dishwasher on Shabbos or so on, you must remember that in terms of the psak halacha, you have to take into consideration the level of iser that you're talking about. So let's say you have a question of what level is hashma'at kol and things like that. Certainly, there are strong grounds to be makel. In any event, we're saying that alibra beit shamai shvitas kelim are usur come hell or high water. It doesn't matter whether they do something. It doesn't matter whether they're completely passive. Then how in the world do you understand the braita? The braita is saying that beit shamai would be matir burning the incense, or he would be matir burning the sulfur. It says beferish in the Mishnah that he does not. Ah, who says that there's a kli? Over there, we're talking about that the incense is right on the ground, on the bottom of the closet. Or maybe the sulfur is on the ground, and you've got a shelf there with all of your silver on top of it. Who's to say there's a kli? Well, I mean, come on, man. I mean, there's a lot of time where there's got to be a kli. What do you mean, who says there's a kli? Are you telling me that you're not allowed to have a cholent, according to Beit Shammai? Because, I mean, if you have a cholent, then the pot is doing work? That's crazy. So, I mean, and what about beer, making beer? It takes more than a week to be sure at the beer. So how is he allowing anybody to ever make beer if it has to sit there in a gigit? How are you allowed to have a lamp burning on Shabbos? I mean, tell him he sits in the dark? So gigit and a ner, and how about a cholent pot? And how about the shaput? The shaput is talking about it's a fersh mishnah later on that you're allowed to put your carbon pesach on a spit. How are you allowed to do that? The spit's doing work. I don't understand. It's maisim b'chol yom that Beit Shammai are mat your passive things. It's impossible to say what you're saying. No, it's not, says the Gemara. All of those cases would only be mutter if you're mafkir the kli. So if the kli doesn't belong to you, there's no problem of shvitat kelim. Now, this is, of course, I mean, to say that Beit Shammai was mater, that everybody knows that they have to be mafkir the kli that they're going to be using, and that the other cases, I mean, obviously, this means that the option is only open to things that need to be done for Shabbos, right? Because, I mean, otherwise, Beit Shammai could have been mater everything and have the guy go ahead and be mafkir the kli. We're talking about over here things that are Tzorach HaShabbos. Once we're talking about things that are Tzorach HaShabbos, there are many Rishonim, including the Rashba, who suggests that the concept of afkile of kuri is not that the guy personally is mafkir, he doesn't know what he's doing, but that Bezdin was mafkir, the kalim that they were matir because of Efker, Bezdin, Efker, and they were matir those kalim only because Bezdin themselves considers it to be the equivalent of Hefker. Fine, okay, so that was part of the takana. Mantan, a lot of Tana Rabbana, take a look at this braisa. Tell me who it's going according to. Now, asasiot and turmasin require a tremendous amount of cooking in order for them to be edible, more than 24 hours. So a woman should not fill up a big pot and put them inside of her oven, which she's already spent so much money on heating that oven, making her challahs for Shabbos and so on. So obviously she wants to use it for things that otherwise she wouldn't be able to afford to cook. So nonetheless, she's not allowed to fill up a pot with these things that require more than 24 hours of cooking and put it into her tanur Erev Shabbos right before Shkia. And if she did do this, then you wouldn't be allowed to use them on Mitzray Shabbos unless you wait long enough for you to have done the entire thing over again on Mitzray Shabbos, which is called Bichtei Shiyasu. Another case is like this. Is lo yamale nachtom chavit shomayim. A baker has the same issue. He's been baking and baking. A lot of money has gone into that, keeping that tanur hot, man. And it's a shame not to use it. So what he would like to do is fill up a giant container of water to be warm for him to be using it right after Shabbos to bake bread. Because remember, the warmth is very good for getting the bread to rise. And so he wants it to be nice and warm after Shabbos. No, if he does that, then he can't use that water after Shabbos unless he waits long enough, b'chtei sheyasu. Now, according to what you're saying now, this should only be true alibi de Beit Shammai, because, after all, it's your tanur that's doing the work. It's not you that's doing the work. And I thought the only one who cares about tanur working on Shabbos is Beit Shammai. So is that only Beit Shammai? And here the Gemara introduces a concept which is going to torture us for a very long time in this Masechet, and is very, very nogea all of the dinim of shehiya. Shehiya means leaving things on the plata, or chazara, which means putting things back in the plata or into a cooler an oven that's no longer lit, and so on. And this is the first time that we hear about this idea. And this idea is called Gizera Shema Yachate Begechalim. We are worried that if we allow you to do things that require heat, you will adjust the heat. And in order to adjust the heat, your beans are going to poke at the coals that are inside of your oven, and you're going to be afraid they're cooling down. You're going to poke them in order that they should be warm, and that would be an Issur D'oraita, and even Beit Hillel is made that anything like that you're not allowed to do. I don't understand, but you just said a minute ago that you are allowed to let the sulfur burn and the incense burn, as long as, even according to Beit Shammai, as long as it be on the ground, everybody should be answering that because Shema Yachata. No. You got to be insane to be choted those things, because if you would, you would wreck everything. If you poke at the incense, it's going to smoke. And if it smokes, it ruins the clothing. If you poke at the sulfur, it's going to emit too much smoke of sulfur and it's going to kill the silver. Okay, what about the other case? What about the case where you put in the flax in order for it to get bleached? Okay, why aren't we worried that you're going to keep the heat going? No, absolutely not. Once you put that flax into your oven, you never open the door until it cools down, because exposure to air kills it in that state. That's called, and this is another munach, please keep track of munachim, of technical terminology. Kashi lohu zika. Kashi lohu zika means exposure to air is problematic. And any place where exposure to air is problematic, we're going to be careful not to be chotah b'gecholim. Anyway, you won't even open up the door of the tanur. Okay, well, what about the case of the wool? Where you put the wool into the vat, what's going to prevent you from over there making sure that it would be hot? So you should also be kosher for chotah b'gecholim. Omer, Shmuel, we're talking about over there, the wool's not on the fire anymore. It's akura, it's taken off of the fire. Okay, but then there's another problem over there. Maybe you'll stir it. And if you stir it, now Rashi says if you stir it, that's considered to be derech bishul. Tosus, which of course is a big issue, whether that's a d'oraisa, because when it goes around a d'oraisa, is stirring something bishul. And Tosus learns that the iser of stirring it would be because the stirring of it would be an act of tzivia. You would be actually dying, but not boiling, not cooking. You're right. It's talking about where the vat was not on the fire, and it was also closed shut and sealed. Once there's a seal on there, you're not going to be terech to take it off, which means you have to peel off the cement or whatever you used, and you'll remember by that time that it's an iser. Okay, so now you're telling me that this brand new idea called Gezerah Shema Yachta B'Gecholim. Oh boy, that is a can of worms, let me tell you. Because now we got to figure out how that din of Shema Yachta affects leaving a cholent pot on the fire, let's say, right? So what would you be allowed to leave on the fire? Well, if there's a Gezerah Shema Yachta B'Gecholim, so look, if you take a pot that has a bunch of raw meat in it, right? So then you'd be allowed to put that down mamish a minute before Shkia. You could put that into the oven. You could put it on the fire. We have no problems. Why is that? Because there's no possible way for it to be ready for you to eat. It's going to take 4 or 5 hours of cooking if it's completely raw. And therefore, you were mesalik your das from it. And kiven delo chazer l'urt, that's not ready. Yasuch mesach daitim. That's called esach adat. You're not going to think about it anymore. By the morning, it'll be warm. That's all you care about. And therefore, lo ati lechatui b'gechalim, it's not going to happen. That's mutter. But in a case where you have something which is not fully cooked, then you got a problem. Because over there, you might actually figure, oh, heck, I didn't turn up the fire enough. If we just a little bit fire more, we would be able to have it for tonight for the soda. So there is a chashash of Shema Yachta b'gechalim. Big machlokas over here, Rashi and Tosafot, which other Rishonim get into, about whether we're talking about it has to be fully cooked or it has to be cooked one-third, which is called kemacho ben rusoi, which we'll see later on is a big issue in Kira, the sheet of Hananya. Tosis learns it's talking about that it only needs to be fundamentally edible in terms of cooking for people who aren't makbid on its being fully cooked. Okay, but in any event, if it's basha v'lo basha, whatever that shear is, then it would definitely be usr. However, suppose what you do is you take a nice big bone that has a bunch of meat on it and you throw it into that cholent pot. Then it would be mutter because there's no way that you're going to eat it with the raw meat in it at the same time. And therefore, that is the equivalent of asachat hadat. And now that you said that also, if something is kosher bezika, something is going to be damaged by exposure to the air, we don't have a problem, then you should know that if you have a, you're cooking up the meat of a gedi. Now, meat of a gedi is very, very vulnerable to exposure to the air. And if it's not cooked and you open up the oven, you're killing it because it gets very hard and inedible. So if you are, there's two issues here. You could have the type of meat that would be damaged with exposure to the air. That was one concept that we saw, right? We also saw the concept of shorik. Shorik means that you close the door and you sealed it. We said that itself would be a heter we talked about before by the Onichal Pishtan. And so what would be the issue of opening it up? There's two possibilities. You won't open up because it's going to be damaged by air, or you won't open it up because it's shorik, like we talked about in terms of the tzabai. And what about if you've got both of these things? Now, if you've got both of these things, you sealed the door, so you're not going to accidentally come, and you don't want to open the door because you want your meat to be nice and tender and therefore will not expose it too early. I'm assuming that Ira makes a lot of this kind of stuff in his special slow cookers, and that because of that, there will be no chashash. So over there, it's for sure okay. Because there you've got both issues handled. It's sealed, and it you don't want it to be exposed to the air. How about take both of those issues out of the picture? Let's say you've got an older animal, a barcha. There's either an older goat, or Rashi says over here it would mean even a ram, and it is not sealed shut. Okay, then you've got no reason not to be gozer, and over there it would be usser. If it was already partially cooked, it's usser. But how about where you have only one of the issues, a gedi? So you don't want it exposed to the air, but you did not seal the oven. Or it's an older animal and you don't mind into the air, but the oven is shut and sealed. So that's a machlokas. Rav Ashi is matir. Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti says, no, it's us. You need both things to be matir. So according to Rav Ashi, that it's mutter, how do you explain the Mishnah later that says, ein tzolin basar batzalu beitza? You're not allowed to broil these things, even onions or eggs, unless there's enough time for it to be fully broiled, miba odiyom. That's talking about a barcha, velo shorik. That's talking about an oven that's not closed, and, according to Rav Ashi, and an older animal that you don't mind. So over there, I'm also mode. I said you need to have one thing that is good, that's on your side. Others say this whole thing over different. A gedi, it doesn't matter whether the door is shut or not. It's fine, because it's like we said before, the Onen Shal Pishtan, you don't want to give any kind of air. If it's an older animal and the oven is shut, that's also fine. Like we said before about the Tzavai. The Machlokas between Rav Ashi and Rabbi Yirmiyahu Midifti is Barcha V'lo Shorik. In the case where there's nothing going for you, it doesn't matter if it's exposed to the air and the oven is not sealed. Rav Ashi holds afal pikein. It is mutter in that case, because the fact is that the oven door is closed. Why does it have to be sealed? Rabbi Yirmiyahu Midifti is going to answer it because Shema Yachta. And according to Rav Ashi, who's matir anything at all, even if the oven isn't sealed, and even if it doesn't matter if it's exposed to the air, how do you explain the fact that the Mishnah says, Ein tzolin basar batzalu beitza, in this version of Rav Ashi? And answers the Gemara, a new idea. We're talking about a brai over there. And that's completely different. Anything that is being barbecued, the coals are right in front of you. Tremendously different than the case of the oven, where in order to be chota b'gecholim, you still have to stick your hand in and so on. Over here, you're looking at it. There's nothing between you and the coals, and it's the most natural thing in the world to poke at them. And that's talking about Bisra Agumre. The meat is over coals. Omravina, if you're talking about a pumpkin, listen, I mean, you certainly can't go without a pumpkin on Shabbos, right? So in the case of a pumpkin, it's fine to let it be in the oven because nobody would want to expose a pumpkin to any kind of air because then it will get all tough. And because of that, it's the equivalent of kibisra de gad yadami. That would be like the kind of meat that is very sensitive. And we said you're allowed to let that roast. And then the next thing we had was Beit Shammai saying you're not allowed to sell to a goy, to put it on his back, to load up his truck. Turn her up on it. Beit Shammai omrim, a man shouldn't sell anything to a goy, and he can't lend him anything, and he can't, yalveno in English, there's no way to make this distinction between yesh ilenu v'yalveno. It's purely a difference in Lashon HaKodesh. Yash Ilenu means you lend it to him so that he gives you back what it is that you gave him. Yalvenu means you give it to him to give back the same thing, but the same type of thing, but it doesn't have to be the same item. That's called a halva'a. You can't give him even a gift unless you're sure that the guy's going to get home before Shabbos. Beis Hillel says, no, you only have to get as, if let's say he's going to a different city, he needs only to get to a place where he could live it next to the wall of his city. Rabbi Akiva says, nah, it's just enough time to go out of the house. Says Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Akiva isn't another Shita. Rabbi Akiva is explaining what Beis Hillel said. And he's saying this Tanakama who said that Beit Hillel says you have to have enough time to get to another city is ridiculous. Beit Hillel never said that. He only said you need to get it out of the house. Lo bar Rabbi Akiva, ela lefaresh divrei Beit Hillel. He only was coming to explain that this shot in his braita is all messed up. Okay, gentlemen, that introduces us to sugyas that are going to be major, major sugyas throughout the next prakim. So it's good to get this stuff very, very straight. The issues of Shemayach to Becholim, the questions of Zika, the idea of Shorik, and the question of Macho Ben Drusoy, which is how much cooked does it have to be, and what is considered to be fully cooked. All these issues are going to be running around in our heads very, very soon.